Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Hare Krishna. Alrighty, so we're reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 14th chapter, verse number 5. You gotta love it. King Chitraketu's Lamentation is the title of the chapter. The subject today is Bhakti is Rarely Achieved. Muktanam api siddhanam Narayana parayana Sudulabha prasanatma Kotishvapi mahamune. Translation together. O great sage, among many... We'll do it together. O great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayana or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are rare, extremely rare. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Jananjana Shilakaya Chaksuhan Manitamena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayate Girim Yakripatamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinitarino Vancha kalpati rubhischa kripa sindhu bhaiva cha patitanam pavinevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasiri Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you for letting me come back out here. Particularly appreciative to Kalakanta, who is constantly adjusting the schedule for my ever-changing schedules and everything at work. So our subject is that bhakti is rarely achieved. I thought, well, how appropriate that I'm giving a class on such a subject as that, since I don't have any bhakti. What is that Sanatan Goswami says? I forgot to bring that quote. There's a quote from Sanatan Goswami. But I have no devotion, no... taste. He said, but I know if I take shelter of the Vaishnavas of Srimad Bhagavatam, that such things will be delivered. So, take shelter of the Vaishnavas and Srimad Bhagavatam in its different format. So, this chapter title also, I was finding it interesting that the title of this chapter also indicates the lack of bhakti, the absence of bhakti. That is, by the use of the word lamentation. King Chitraketu, he's engaged in this one particular activity which will actually block, which will be an obstacle to our development of bhakti, and that is the process of lamentation. Of course, the flip side of lamentation is hankering. 2 points for who can give me the verse from Bhagavad Gita that particularly addresses this subject of lamentation and hankering. That's one. I was looking much later in the Gita. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sobjitina Kanchiti, chapter 18. Huh? 1854. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochitina Kanchati Samasaveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains devotional service unto me. Never laments. Just a little side tip, quick little marriage counseling advice. These guys right here, first service my wife ever did for me 31 years ago was took all my verses that I'd regularly memorized and put them on index cards. That was back before any of this stuff, and this was how you memorized verses. I still have those verses stacked like that, and I still use them regularly. So just a little tip for you wives or future wives, how to work your way into your husband's dealings. What's that? Can I circulate them? No, they don't leave my hand. So this is the mentality, if you will, that will give us great difficulty in the process of developing our path back to home, back to God, this process of lamentation. And, of course, it is what the material world is filled with. We're constantly hankering and lamenting. This is the duality of this world. And so we want to strive in such a way to free ourselves from that. Now, I was noticing the Sanskrit meter, if you will, and particularly the translation, Muktanambhapi Siddhasam Narayana Parayana Sudula Ba Prasanatma Koti Shvapi Mahamune. And then, of course, as we read the translation, O great sage among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayana or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. Another 2 points, who can match that with a very similar Bhagavad Gita verse? You should know by now if I come out, there's going to be questions. Huh? Out of many millions. Huh? Manusyanam sahasrasyu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Chapter and verse? 7:3. It's on my note cards. So this verse, same concept as we're studying here. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So this is interesting because we find that the tenets of the Bhagavad Gita, which is our foundation in spiritual life, it's our ABCs as Prabhupada regularly referred to it, is not, okay, now that's that, let's move on to some higher subject. We find here we are in the sixth canto, halfway through the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Purana, the sunum bonum of all knowledge, and we're getting the same information, the same instructions still, because this is a very important thing to realize, that the rarity of devotional service, the fact that one does not easily obtain that. So in this verse, as we go through the purport, it's a very long purport by Srila Prabhupada. I'm just going to highlight a few things here. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives the following purport to this verse. Those of you, some of you may not know, when Srila Prabhupada traveled during his time with us, he always carried 2 books with him. One book was the English Sanskrit Dictionary, and the other book was a commentary by all the Goswamis on Bhagavad Purana. 2 books he always had on his desk in his case when he traveled. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Jiva Goswami, like that. And he would refer to all these things when he was doing his purports. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti gives the following purport to this verse. Simply desiring mukti, or liberation, is insufficient. One must become factually liberated. When one understands the futility of materialistic way of life, I love that phrase, understands the futility of materialistic way of life, one becomes advanced in knowledge and therefore situates himself in the vanaprastha order, unattached to family, wife, and children. One should then further progress to the platform of sannyas, the actual renounced order, never to fall again and be afflicted by materialistic life. Even though one desires to be liberated, this does not mean one is liberated. We may desire to win the lottery. And you see many people line up, and the bigger it gets, the more people line up. They have that desire. It doesn't mean they're going to win. So here again, many people may desire that liberation. It doesn't mean they're actually liberated. Only rarely is someone liberated. Indeed, although many men take sannyas to become liberated, because of their imperfections, they again become attached to women, materialistic activities, social welfare work, and so on. Gyanis, yogis, and karmis, devoid of devotional service, are called offenders. One thing that I noticed here, one desires bhakti. We actually refer to each other as a bhakta. Bhakta Bill, Bhakta Tom, Bhakti Mary, whatever. And our thought process is that, you know, once I get advanced, I can give up that bhakta title and I'll become so-and-so das. Chani Tai Das. You know, like that, you know. So we'll get, you know, something better than that. But actually, being addressed as a bhakta is a very elaborate thing. It's a very honorable and advanced point. Because we see here, Mahaprabhu is talking in this next little section here about the Mayavadi sannyasis who have no bhakti. They're sannyasis. They have performed all the activities to attain liberation. They are on the path to liberation, but they are lacking bhakti. So to be called a bhakta is actually something very, very honorable, very wonderful. But, you know, we have this kind of casual idea, you know, it's just like we throw the word Prabhu around. You know, oh, Prabhu, come on. You know, Prabhu. You know, you know, so these are phrases that are indicative of the consciousness when we use them. So we should always be very thoughtful in that way. Now, oh, well, because we become das or whatever. This is, you know, but I'm saying we may drop the visual, the verbal name, but we shouldn't drop the mentality, consciousness of being a bhakta. So, you know, the descriptions given here of the sannyasis, the vanaprasas, those who are advanced, desiring this way, moving along that path. So I get to thinking, gee, what about the rest of us? You know? I mean, what about those of us, you know, who are just muddling our way through, who are, you know, householders or engaged in business, living here at the Krishna house? You know, what about the rest of us? So the path of bhakti is available to us as well. We'll go a little bit more into that a little later in this purport here. The next section here, Srila Prabhupada talks about the... just catch up here with myself. Yeah. He mentions how Mahaprabhu talks about the Mayavadi sannyasis being offenders. During Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, one of his most prominent devotees in his sannyas lila when he was living in Jagannath Puri was Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya. There are many very well-known stories about Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, of course, how he met with Mahaprabhu and how he instructed Mahaprabhu in the Vedanta for 7 days. There's one very nice story. Is, of course, after the association of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya attained a different level of realization. Now, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, Prabhupada mentions here how there are certain devotees who are... he mentions there are two types of jnanis. Those who are inclined to devotional service and those who are inclined towards impersonal realization. Now, we think... jnani, process of devotional service, because generally we think, okay, Mayavadis, jnanis, yogis, who give all that up and become advanced in bhakti. But Prabhupada says right here that there's two types of jnanis, and one of those is inclined towards devotional service. This would be Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya. He further, just a little bit later in the purport, interjects that of the jnanis that are inclined to devotional service, there are two schools. One is those that feel that the process of rendering service, the process of seeing Lord Narayana's presence, is temporary. That he eventually merges with the totality of the energy and all that dissipates like that. And then the others that are, of course, inclined to understand clearly and properly that Lord Narayana is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya was in this first school. And he was very prominent in Jagannath Puri. He was a very well-known devotee, leader in the community of Vaishnavas there, leader in the Puri Brahmins, I should say. And what he did, many, many people followed. So after his initial contact with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his initial instructions and all, in due course of time, he became completely purified of this idea of liberation, to the point that there's a famous verse that is often quoted. He would quote this verse after his purification from the association of Mahaprabhu. And in that verse is the word Muktipad. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya changed that to Bhaktipad when he recited that. Special 5-point award for anybody that knows where that verse from. I'm missing our Gyanis here. Tenth canto. Yes. Very good. Yeah, Srimad Bhagavatam. 10:14:8. And in that verse, in that verse it describes how by the process of Muktipada, one becomes liberated. And so Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he recited that verse for Mahaprabhu, we changed it to Bhaktipada. Now, Mahaprabhu, of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Person of Godhead, the Super Soul in the heart of all living entities. In his particular lila as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took a different role. So he inquired from Sarvabhauma, he said, changing the Bhagavad Purana? The verse is Muktipada. You're actually going to change this verse? Is that appropriate? So Sarvabhauma went on to explain that, yes, it actually is appropriate because bhakti surpasses mukti. Devotion surpasses liberation. And then, of course, they had a very long explanation of that, and Mahaprabhu was very, very happy to hear this realization and to see the change in the character of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Of course, as I mentioned, all the leaders in Puri, once Sarvabhauma made this very significant change in his service and in his outlook, he was then followed by so many others. In other words, he set this example, and they all assumed that. Who knows that Bhagavad Gita verse that highlights this point? Huh? Yad yad acharati shreshtas, yes. Verse and chapter? 321. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave that. What? Oh, the translation, the verse on that. Manusinam sahasrisa. Oh, no, wait. Sorry, that's the other one. Yad yad acharati shreshtas. What activity a great man does, common men follow. Whatever standard he sets by his exemplary acts, all the world pursues. It's a famous verse from the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So, in this way, we see that there is actually an option for the rest of us, as I mentioned, who may not be these vanaprasthas and sannyasis, to follow the example of those who have set the path ahead of us. In this case, the wonderful thing about Srila Prabhupada's movement is that we have the opportunity in our own association to do that. When Kalakanta Prabhu and I first joined ISKCON, I mean, if you were, 25, 26 years old and had been a devotee for 3 or 4 years, oh, you were very senior. You were made a temple president. He was sent out to open centers, you know. So, and this was very prominent that, well, if I just follow this path, I'll actually become advanced in devotional service as well. So as Srila Prabhupada's society has grown, you now all have great opportunity. There are so many devotees that you can be inspired by, so many devotees whose example you can follow. And in this way, one, regardless of their circumstance, could be advanced in the process of devotional service and attain bhakti. And this goes to the point of Narayana Parayana. What does Prabhupada say here? He says, Those who have realized the truth are called siddhas. They may be considered nearer to spiritual perfection because at least they have realized what spiritual life is. If such a person becomes Narayana Parayana, a devotee of Lord Narayana, he is better than Jivan Mukta, one who is liberated or perfect. This requires higher intelligence. So this type of identity as Narayana Parayana is determined not by one's particular birth. This was a point that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very, very particular on, very strong in his preaching. Likewise, after him, Narottam Das Thakur followed the same line. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also was very emphatic on this. And, of course, Srila Prabhupada took great criticism for his following of this principle. But the fact of the matter is that one's consciousness, one's activities determine whether one falls into the category of Narayana Parayana, whether one is determined to be Krishna conscious, not the particular birth. Srila Prabhupada took great criticism in the early years from not only Smarta Brahmanas, but from his own god brothers. It did not have the vision that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's statement that this Sankirtan movement be spread to every town and village went outside of India. Actually, I forget which god brother it was, but was speaking later after Prabhupada's departure and mentioned that, we all said, okay, this means maybe bigger than Bengal, okay, all throughout India. But Srila Prabhupada had that vision, and this means everywhere. And to that end, he traveled very extensively and took people whose only qualification was their desire. I remember back in the beginning, we may desire liberation, but it doesn't mean we've attained it. So we have a desire for something better than materialistic life. And Prabhupada saw that and fanned that spark and encouraged people in the process of bhakti. And by his purity, he was able to imbibe that mood of purity in us. So persons who, and I think I can speak for at least 98% of us in this room, persons whose previous life is completely devoid of any religious principles, devoid of any hint of devotional service, devoid of any determination for liberation, what to speak of desire for bhakti, have now been able to qualify themselves in that way because of their service, because of the association, because of the activities that are performed. So in this way one can actually, this is the bad thing about these E things, they don't stay on. If anybody knows how to adjust that, tell me after class. So this is the wonderful thing about devotional services. It's not determined by our previous birth or the current situation, but it's determined by the desire to actually attain bhakti. Now, Prabhupada mentions when he's talking about these two different types of jnanis. One is inclined to devotional service, the other to impersonalist realization. Impersonalists generally undergo endeavor for no tangible benefit, and therefore it is said that they are husking paddy that has no grain. Stula tushava gantina. So, in other words, they're dry. Prabhupada uses this phrase all the time, dry jnanis. And I was thinking about this in kind of a ISKCON lingo way. We don't want to be dry. We want the juice, you know? If I say to you, oh, Prabhu, here, I have some dry chapatis for you. I have some dry rasgullas I'd like to share with you, you know? Dry coconut husk. Here, you take this dry coconut husk. You'll enjoy it very much. Nobody's enticed. Dry chapati is so brilliant, you know? Rasgulla is meant to be dripping with rasa, with juice. You know, you take it and it's dry, you break it in half. So we're not interested in that. Similarly, we have to be attentive to the fact that our devotional service should have some juice in it. We should be getting some satisfaction, some rasa, some taste from what we're doing. And that will advance us beyond just a basic level of a jnani. This is what Prabhupada means when he talks about there are jnanis in the process of devotional service. Knowledgeable of what devotional service was about, but not getting that taste, because that taste will give us the appreciation for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the appreciation for the Supreme Personality of Godhead's pastimes for his devotees. So this is something that, you know, we have to strive for. We have to endeavor for. And we do that by different processes that are there to us, the chanting of our rounds, the absorbing ourselves in reading of Shastra, the katha that we have with each other. These are the things that increase our taste for that subject matter. There's the word here that Prabhupada uses for those who are husking the paddy that has no grain. Shtula dushavagantina. Real extra credit if anybody knows where that's from. I had to actually look really hard for this. That's all.
We actually had this verse in our curriculum.
Oh, really? No.
I think it's, you had a class that made a real impression.
Huh? Well, it's a little later. It's in the 10th canto. It happens to be in the same chapter as the verse Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya quotes, Muktipad. It's just four verses before that. So that's an important chapter you might want to look up. 10th canto, chapter 14. yeah, there was another wonderful word in the Sanskrit that caught my attention here. Mogosha, where was that? Baffles their hopes. Is that in the Sanskrit to this verse? Or? No, that was in the Sanskrit to this verse from the 10th canto that Prabhupada quotes here. He mentions how the mentality of liberation actually baffles the hopes of the living being. That those persons who are striving for that, who are trying to achieve that, they're not able to actually progress in that path. This particular purport Prabhupada quotes, here it is. It's in the Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter. He quotes several verses in the purport to emphasize the points that he's making. And this one from the 9th chapter of the Gita, Mogasho Moga Karmano, Moga Jnana Visechata, Rakshanim Ashunim Chaiva, Prakritim Mohinim Stitra. Those who are thus bewildered, attracted by demoniac atheistic views, they're deluded in that condition, their hopes for liberation, their hopes for fruitive activities, their culture and knowledge are all defeated. So mogasha, when one becomes baffled, the nature of this material world that is meant to baffle us, to confuse us, to bewilder us and sidetrack us, this is actually, once you take to the process of devotional service, this is Maya's job. There's the illusion that covers the living entity in their conditioned state, and then there's the illusion that covers the living entity in their spiritual state, Yogamaya and Mahamaya. And the devotees are coming out of one, hoping to place themselves in the other, and it appears to be a bit of a contradiction. Wait, do I ever get a point where I'm not illusioned? But the type of illusion that we're experiencing is what we strive to change. We want to remove the illusion of thinking with this body, thinking with this material conditioning, of desiring materialistic satisfaction in life, of acquiring knowledge and all of these different things. And we want to have the illusion of thinking, oh, Krishna's just my little son. Krishna's just a cowherd boy in the village. This is the illusion the residents of Vrindavan are under. That they're thinking, Krishna's, how can we live without Krishna? He's just the cutest little boy. They're not thinking, oh, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as a matter of fact, whenever they do begin to think like that, whenever their devotion in that way begins to manifest, it ruins the whole pastime. Krishna covers them back up. Yogamaya. The classic example, of course, is when Krishna is accused of eating dirt by his playmates. And so Mother just sort of says, all right, you know, typical mother, my son's eating dirt. You take that out of your mouth. Open your mouth, take that out. Right? Any mother or parent, you know, your son's been eating dirt. Oh, now he's going to get all sick. Oh, open your mouth. No, I didn't eat it. I didn't eat it. Let me see. So he opens his mouth, and what does she see? The entire universe. All the planetary systems. Herself. Maybe Krishna, she becomes a world, and then she starts offering all these glorious prayers. Oh, my dear Lord, oh, Supreme Person, yeah, I've got it. She's like, oh, now it's all ruined. You know, she's respecting me and offering obeisances to me and glorifying me. No, where's my mother? So in that way, that other kind of illusion takes over, and that's the one that actually makes the relationship very, very sweet. So this type of baffling happens to us in materialistic life. Is there anybody here that's ever been baffled by their attempt to attain something? I'll take that as a yes. You know, we constantly, and it doesn't matter how beneficial, you know, it might not just be, oh, I just want some gross sense gratification, we're trying to achieve it, you know. It might be something much more lofty. Oh, I'm trying to attain a particular position with a company, you know. I'm trying to attain a particular type of a degree or success in the university or, you know, like that. These different things. And then we become baffled and it just doesn't happen. So as a devotee, we know how to be detached from that and move on. But non-devotees, they become very much disturbed by these types of things. And the reality is that we are going to be baffled all the time. Now, in this same section here, let me find this next verse, Prabhupada quotes here. Prabhupada then quotes, it says in the purport here, those who aspire to be elevated to the heavenly planets by devotional service will also be frustrated because this is not the result of devotional service. So one situates himself in devotional service and due to being improperly guided or not getting the proper knowledge, one thinks, well, if I just perform this activity properly, then I'll attain the heavenly planets. And by attaining those heavenly planets, all satisfaction will be there. All success in devotional service will be there. Prabhupada says, you're going to be frustrated. Now, one might think, how can I be frustrated in the process of devotional service? That's why I take to devotional service, because I'm frustrated with the material life. If your goal is not properly in line with the teachings of Bhagavad, then frustration will be the result. There's actually no way that that can be avoided. The result of devotional service is not to attain the heavenly planets, because the heavenly planets are all part of this material world. Another Bhagavad Gita option here. Who knows that verse? Nobody? The verse that confirms the fact that the heavenly planets are part of this material world. Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Puna Arvatina Arjuna. That's the 8th chapter, verse 16. That from the highest planet in the material world, the heavenly planets, to the lowest planet, the hellish planets, and then we're in the middle in the earthly realm, all are places of misery because they're temporary. Devotional service is not about finding a comfortable place in the temporary material existence. Devotional service is about elevating ourselves back to the spiritual world, back to home, back to Godhead. This is why Prabhupada incorporated this phrase, back to home, back to Godhead. In other words, leaving here. So this is indicative of the fact that we are striving for something more than that. So if our goal in devotional service is the heavenly planets and all the satisfaction that comes from there, we'll be frustrated. And Prabhupada, it's really nice how Prabhupada says this. He says here, however, whenever anyone is speaking and they give some point and they say, however, you know that a caveat is about to be introduced. However, there is also given a chance to engage in devotional service and be purified. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second verse, chapter 17, Sringata Svakata Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana, Hridanto Stahyabhadrani, Vidunoti Suhut Satam. Very, very famous verse, very famous verse. So, in the effort for devotional service, I like the, where is it here? Prabhupada mentions the purport after this. He mentions that unless the dirt within the core of one's heart is cleaned away, one cannot become a pure devotee. Therefore, the word sudurlabha, Sudurlabha is used. Now, su, when you add it on to a Sanskrit word, it's interesting. It increases. Sudurlabha means rare. Sudurlabha means very rare. So it's very rare that one can attain the process of devotional service. But, as Prabhupada says, however, there is a chance given. And what is that chance? Shravanam, Shringata Svakata Krishna. Punya Shravanam Kirtanam. So, by the, the actual translation is very sweet on this. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Person of Godhead, who is the Paramatma Super Soul in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So that particular verse has some very, very key points in it. The first one is truthful devotee. We have to be honest with ourselves, not to falsely present ourselves as being somewhere in devotional service that we're not. We have to be honest. What are my shortcomings? What are my misgivings? What do I need to address in purifying myself? What activities do I need to pay attention to advance further in the process of devotional service? That's a truthful devotee. And such a truthful devotee finds that the Supreme Lord will cleanse his heart of material enjoyment. When? Just because, okay, you're a devotee, your heart's cleansed. No. He cleanses it if you relish his message. What's that relish? What's that mean? Rasa. Taste. Something that's got some juice to it. If you appreciate it, if you enjoy it. To relish something means you're enjoying it. You have to enjoy devotional service. You have to enjoy kirtan. You have to enjoy class if it's given by somebody worthwhile. You have to be able to enjoy the process of following the regulative principles. Enjoy prasadam. That's not too hard to do. And by that process, one relishes his messages because those messages are virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So not just heard and chanted. We have to hear and chant. That's important. But properly. If you've had the good fortune to listen to any of the lectures by Satchinandana Swami, he speaks very much to this point about how to fix our consciousness for properly executing the process of Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting. That doesn't only mean kirtan and japa. It also means referring to reading books, because we're hearing and then we're repeating that to someone. So that's a process of hearing and chanting too. So these messages from the Lord, we have to relish them and then in the proper consciousness repeat those. And then that actually gives us that opportunity for sudurlabha, to attain that very rare process of devotional service. Yes. Point that Prabhupada goes right to here, that the core of the heart is cleansed away. Prabhupada, of course, has used that example many times of a mirror, that we have to be able to see the reflection, the pure reflection, and the process of chanting, the process of devotional service is cleansing that mirror. Very, very, very tried and true example that we should all be very familiar with. Back to the purport. Not only among hundreds and thousands of persons, but among millions of perfectly liberated souls, a pure devotee is hardly found. Therefore, the words koti svapi are used herein. Now, koti means million, right? Kotishu means many millions. So among many such persons, and here's a little extra credit, if anybody can give me another source where that word koti is very common. Huh? That's one place. I was thinking of something a little bit more close to our end of the time spectrum. Yeah. Nityapada Kamala Koti Chandra Shushitva. That the mercy of Lord Nityananda is like millions and millions of boons. This is written by Nartam Das Thakur, yes. So this use of the word koti is to exemplify the vast expanse of such an opportunity. Madhvacharya speaks about this. Prabhupada refers to him in the next translation, that there are millions, kotishu, many millions of demigods and millions of sages, but among them only a few are qualified as Narayana Parayana. So we have that great opportunity if we have the urge. If we have the urge to advance ourselves down that path. Now, this is an important thing because we're all familiar with urges, right? Everybody's got an urge or something. That's why we're here in the material world. We've had some urge to enjoy. And our entire life up to this point has been filled with all kinds of attempts at all types of different urges. And when we go out, we see immediately all the conditioned living entities are still captured by that urge. And that urge is simply bringing them more suffering. We have the opportunity in devotional service to use that same process of having an urge to purify ourselves and advance in the process of devotional service. That urge to hear about Krishna. Because Sringata Svakata Krishna, by hearing, we become purified. Hrida. The heart becomes cleansed. But only when we have that strong desire, that strong urge. So everything's given to us. All we have to bring to the table is the desire, the urge. And it's such an easy opportunity. But we have to grasp it very seriously. And this is the process by how we can qualify ourselves for bhakti. So although bhakti is rarely obtained, by having the proper desire for hearing and chanting about the Lord, by properly cleansing the dirt from our heart, by properly aligning ourselves with the teachings of the Bhagavad, we can actually attain that bhakti. And what do we do when we get something very wonderful? We want to give that to others. We want to share that. So this is the real clear point that Prabhupada's making here. Prabhupada finishes it off saying, the difference between the siddhas and the Narayana Parayanas is that direct devotees are called Narayana Parayana, whereas those who perform various types of mystic yoga are called siddhas. So we want to be a direct devotee. That's what we're hankering for. Now, of course, we understand direct devotee means dasa, 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 nudasa, servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. You know, we're never directly approaching Krishna, but always through the agency of the Vaishnavas, through the agency of our spiritual master, who's giving us that opportunity. And then when we grasp that, when we show that intensity of desire, then we actually get the award of bhakti being present in our heart. So we'll finish there. If anybody has any questions or comments or corrections, I'll entertain those. Everybody? Nothing? Everybody understood? Good.
How do we get the incentive shift our urge from materialism to Krishna consciousness?
Prabhupada, sounds good, but in
practice, it can be very dry.
Right. Well, Prabhupada mentions it right here earlier in the purport. He says, when one is frustrated, and I think even earlier, in the very beginning of this, he mentions that understanding the futility of material life. So this is how we get that desire transformed. How we transform that desire to our benefit is understanding that whatever it is we're hankering for is not going to bring us any satisfaction. We're simply going to be frustrated. And the interesting thing is that we keep thinking it'll happen. Is back to the example of the lottery. I mean, there's a gas station, of course there's gas stations all over the place, but there happens to be one right near where I work, and anytime I stop in there, there's all the same people going in there buying these lottery tickets, you know? And it's a known fact that the people that spend the most on lottery tickets are the people that can least afford to do so. Because they're thinking, oh, I'll win this time. I mean, it's such a classic example for us. I'll be the one to win this time. And they buy their $5 worth, $10 worth, and they get them all, lay them out, tear them up, throw them away. That quickly. That's the length of time that it takes for them to become frustrated with their efforts for material happiness. Pay the money, get the ticket, look at the number match, and throw it away. All right, that doesn't happen. But this is the interesting thing about the living entity's plight in this world. What do you see? The next day, they're back doing the same thing. Or the following week, or I don't even know how the cycle on these lottery things go. But, you know, you see the same people go and do the same thing. So when our intelligence, Prabhupada mentions this in the purport, that when our intelligence kicks in and we realize that this repetitious dissatisfaction is not going to bring us any happiness, it's not going to deliver us from the condition. Because that's the whole point using this example of the people buying lottery tickets. Because if I just win this lottery and get all this money, it'll deliver me from my suffering condition. I have so many urges, so many desires, so many things I want, and I can't achieve them. But if I just win this lottery ticket and I get my $6.7 million, I'll be able to get everything I want. Well, first of all, you'll only be able to get half of it because the government's going to take 45% of your savings, right? On lottery tickets and dividends, things like that, you lose 45% to taxes. Okay, now you're down to somewhere in the 3 million range. So you better cut your expectations in half right off the bat. And then, of course, it's another very well-known social fact that many, many of these people, most of them, that win this lottery within a short time, they don't have their money. They haven't become any happier. They become completely entangled in so many difficult circumstances. Of course, they're approached by everybody that's their long-lost cousin from three generations ago and two aunts removed that actually, you should help me out now because we're family, you know, like that. But here again, it's the same mood of a devotee. When a devotee attains the lottery of devotional service, what's he do? He wants to give it to everyone. Even they don't come to him and say, hey, you know, could you share that with me? You know, occasionally we see those persons that come and say, oh, can you share devotional service with me? Can you tell me something? But a devotee goes out and wants to give it, just like a good philanthropist. He attains wealth and he spreads it out, gives it to everyone. So these are the things that will help us develop a distaste for devotional service and attain a real taste for achieving the level of bhakti, devotional service. Yes, Prabhupada.
Arjuna asks, like, oh, why is it that even though a person doesn't want to do it, but she's forced, compelled to do?
Well, just like the lottery example that we're using, person gets that winning ticket, he's forced to give 45% to the government. He doesn't want to, but the circumstances attached to that desire require that. So we may have a particular desire, but along with that goes certain types of consciousness, certain types of activity, certain types of material reactions that are going to push us in a particular direction and that are going to bring a particular type of result with them, whether we want it or not. Just use Prabhupada's example of the four regulative principles. We may think, oh, I'm just gambling and I'll win something on the horses, but what does gambling do? Along with it comes lack of truthfulness. You may think, oh, I'm just going to have some casual relationship with this person here. Along with illicit sex comes uncleanliness. So we don't want that side of it, right? We want the happiness, but we don't want the distress. You know, the distress is going to be a part of it. You know, so that's just the way the material world is packaged because it's got that duality. So with everything we achieve, there's always going to be another side of it that's not exactly what we want. But that's why this material world is set up in this way, to hopefully let us learn that lesson. The spiritual world doesn't have that type of duality. It's not there. Prabhuji?
Wondered, and also the Gita verse, if that also, we can interpret that to mean that even for devotees, the achievement of the supreme goal can be like, can't be assumed that we'll attain that in this lifetime. You know, like, it can't be taken for granted that that just because we're devotees or we're initiated or we're chanting 16 rounds that, you know, we're going to achieve that supreme goal. I don't know if that's just a downer thought or if it's like, if it's...
Well, there's two sides to that. One side is that Srila Prabhupada has brought Guru Kripa. He's brought this vast, causeless mercy from the spiritual master that elevates us to that platform. And Prabhupada said it many times, if you simply do this, I promise you, you'll go back to Godhead. Now, along with that, of course, we're talking about developing a consciousness. The fact of the matter is that even if one has some hint of material desire that does happen to keep one back another birth, supposedly, Bhagavad Gita here again says very clearly, there's no loss. You'll pick up right back where you were the last time, plus that little extra percentage. So there's no reason for us to be discouraged in the execution of devotional service. Oh, I've got such a challenge. How can I possibly make good on this? First of all, Prabhupada has given us that process by which we can make good. You know, out of many thousands among persons, out of many millions among persons, we have that opportunity through the process of devotional service as given to us by Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. So that should be encouraging to us. And Prabhupada said, it'll bear the result. The flip side of that is that even if by some chance it doesn't give the full result immediately, we'll get it a little later. It's going to come. You know, we just, we have to have patience. It's like I was listening, because I have so many friends up in New York City, and, you know, with all this disaster that's up there, they were interviewing the mayor, and Mayor Bloomberg said, you're just going to have to be patient. He said, it's not going to happen overnight, but it's going to happen. And I thought, that's just like devotional service. We're not going to go back to Godhead overnight, but it's going to happen. This is Prabhupada's promise. This is the promise of the acharyas. This is the promise of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. We just have to have that faith.